Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big
step!
Oh,
brother!
Lead Toledo, Ernest. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast at HarvardProcessing.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me as usual is Rich Kraich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Absolutely. I'm so glad we finally, after so long of talking basketball, we're going to talk wrestling for the next month of March, right?
Is that what we're going to do?
It's WrestleMania, right?
I believe, sir, it's WrestleMania.
All right. Well, that's fine.
All right.
Bill Russell?
You'll wing it.
Is it Bill Russell?
It is Bill Russell, yes.
Oh, I thought not Russell Westbrook. Bill Russell.
No.
Okay. All right.
I mean, not that Russell Westbrook wouldn't be worth a WrestleMania down the line as well. I mean, I guess we could hit all the NBA Russells.
Yeah, I guess we got to hit all the Russells. Yeah. How many basketball Russells can I? I'm trying to think off the top of my head. D'Angelo Russell would probably not be very good.
There's Rushaney. I don't know if he was a Russell or just a Russ, but we probably could just grandfather him in. You know,
Byron Russell.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, we'll take.
Is there not that many Russells? I'm trying to think in the top of my head. I don't want to look it up, but that's the only three I can think of off the top of my head. And
I'm sure there'll be okay. Dozens that are brought to our attention after the Russells that we forgot. But we'll table that. We'll see how that goes. I think
Bill Russell this time. Okay.
I think Bill probably would be the first to start off with. I think that's
fair enough.
Idea.
Fair enough.
So we are going to do a multi-week series looking at Bill Russell's career, his legacy, his life, his playoff battles, all the great things about Bill Russell. We were doing some reading. We decided, you know what? We just want to crack this nut, so to speak, and just, be all about Bill Russell. So and we just like the pun, too. You know?
Yeah, let's be honest. Yeah. It's because we're wrestling
it's
fans.
Because
we,
of the
we needed to make a WrestleMania pun for this season. But no, it definitely works. It's something that's long overdue for us to sort of discuss Bill Russell at a little bit more length, because we've mentioned him a little bit and here and there, but I don't think we've really done due diligence on him. And it's time we do it. And if we can do it in a playful pun, themed a month, of course. Come on.
It's the greatest thing that's ever come out of a pun. So.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean the first things that come to mind for me for Russell is just obviously like the unparalleled success that he had in his career. 11 championships in 13 seasons, 12 finals appearances. He is tied with Henry Richard of the Montreal Canadiens for the most North American pro athlete team titles ever, but he was slightly more important than Henry Richard. No offense, Henry. I don't know much.
Gee, whoa, man, the blue line. I don't know what the hell the NHL hockey podcast is going to be very upset. Okay. I was trying to think of what they would call their the parallel universe NHL history
icing,
podcast.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the icing,
the icing and back podcast. Yeah,
the offsides and icing podcast is going to get really upset about this. But
all right,
we'll bring them on. We'll talk and we'll discuss.
Sure, eight championships in a row for the Boston Celtics during his career. The greatest championship streak in North American pro sports history. He was a five-time MVP, three times on the All-NBA first team, eight times on the second team. Of course, only behind because he played alongside Will Chamberlain. Is that he wasn't on the first team more often, but obviously that's still quite impressive. His team led by him, had a record of 10-0 in game sevens during his career. He averaged 18 points and 29.5 rebounds in series deciding games. He also led the University of San Francisco to a 55-game winning streak and two NCAA titles. He won a NCAA title, a gold medal, and an NBA title within 13 months. He's one of seven players to win all three of those. He is second all-time in rebounding, and the NBA Finals MVP is named after him. So that's that all obviously is pretty great. He is really just, you know,
it's a good way to put it.
Thank you.
I like that. I like that.
But I mean, just an amazing player, but really more than that, he is just he's really a basketball pioneer. I mean, just really changed the way the game was played. And we'll get into that in a little bit. And he was a pioneer for black players. He was the first black superstar in the NBA, led to greater black representation in the NBA during his career. The first black coach in pro sports, you know, so just as from those parallels and from his role as an activist, helping being, you know, a leader in the social change that was going on during the time and speaking out about civil rights and, you know, and against the Vietnam War and things like that. He really was, you know, a part of a generation. And one of the standouts who was not afraid to, you know, speak out about what he believed and was not, you know, before Bill Russell, before his generation, you know, black athletes, you know, basically were forced to be humble and be quiet and be accepting and, you know, not to rock the boat at all. And, you know, and Russell was able to help break some of those barriers and let, you know, people be themselves and let, you know, people be thought of, athletes be thought of as more than just athletes, but as players and as, you know, all the things that encompass that. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that he was able to do it in Boston as well is pretty profound as well, because given, you know, the climate at the time, it wasn't necessarily a city that was. And it's not to say they were horribly backwards or anything like that, but it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't the bastion of racial, you know,
yeah.
you know,
and, yeah.
it had its issues.
Yeah. I'm not sure there was an NBA city or any city in America during that time that was particularly one. I mean, Boston had some unique things, you know, in and of itself that may have been a particularly virulent strain of it, but yeah, I mean, you know, anywhere he would have played, there would have obviously been significant issues.
Certainly.
So, but yes, that's I don't want to demean the people of Boston, but you know, I don't think anyone should be surprised that there are, you know, that there were issues there.
Absolutely.
So, Rich, you cracked some of the numbers of him as an overall player. Why don't you, share with our good listeners?
One thing I definitely wanted to talk about a little bit, and it comes to mind, at least when, you know, in doing some of this reading about Bill Russell and reading up a little bit about him, is that there's sort of a perception, and that's not saying, you know, it seems a lot of sort of maybe casual fans or fans that don't really do like the type of research we do or you know, read biographies about Bill Russell and all that sort of stuff, get this idea that he was a defensive first guy, and which he was a tremendous defender, we'll get to that here in a little bit, but that he was just like this guy that would, you know, rebound and steal and block and then just facilitate for other people and, you know, do all this sort of stuff. But he's a really good scorer in his era too, and like I don't know if enough people appreciate that, where they sort of think of and we'll talk a little bit, you know, in another episode about how Wilt Chamberlain was sort of this scorer to the Russell, the defender, which is fine because Russell was a better defender and, you know, an elite all-time great, maybe without a doubt, or, you know, maybe the best defender of all time. Yeah. Whereas, you know, Wilt was without a doubt, you know, one of the best scorers of all time, but there's sort of this dichotomy that one's a scorer and one's a defender, whereas Russell's a very good scorer too. So I wanted to sort of address a little bit of that here as well. Here are his career averages to give you an idea of what Russell was able to do in his era. 15.1 points per game, 22.5 rebounds per game. Also, a very impressive 4.3 assists per game. He shot 44% from the field, which wasn't fantastic even in that era, but still wasn't like horrendously awful. It was just sort of average for his era. Otherwise, some of the advanced stuff, 163.5 win shares, a 0.193 win shares per 48. And then probably the most impressively, which I'll get to here in a little bit, 133.6 defensive win shares was just an incredible amount. He led the league in defensive win shares 11 of 13 seasons, including 10 consecutive ones. He led the NBA in rebounding per game his first three seasons, and then twice again in 1964 and 1965. He is one of two players in NBA history to average over 15 points, over 20 rebounds, and over four assists per game. The other one is Will Chamberlain, of course. So that's can't get away from each other. They have to just always be on neck and neck. But I thought this was great. He's first all-time in defensive win shares, which is a cumulative stat. So you sort of think, oh, you know, hey, he was around for a long time and he sort of collected it. And, you know, it's not a big, but, you know, when you really look at his career, he wasn't really around what I would consider all that long. I mean, it was a long time, of course, but it's not like a guy who, you know, we see guys now, including the guy who's second in defensive win shares, who's Tim Duncan, who's obviously had a much longer career than Bill Russell. Tim Duncan is the next closest in defensive win shares. He is 30 away. So that's a tall timber for Mr. Tim Duncan there. I don't think he's going to break that record. So I think Bill Russell will continue to have a defensive win share record. And even when you look at current players, like, nobody is close. Like, that's something that he is probably going to have forever. And it's going to really take a rare talent to top him in that. And it's just incredible how he ranks even now amongst others in you know, win shares and defensive win shares. His all-time ranks when he retired, I think this is a good way to sort of get a snapshot of, you know, when he was done, here's where he ranked amongst these things. Games he was first played, minutes played, or games he was first overall, minutes played he was first, points he was third. So again, you know, that's the idea that he wasn't really a scorer. You know, he's third when he retired, all-time in points. Free throws made he was sixth. So again, you know, we sort of think of him as not really a guy who did much on the offensive end, but, you know, he retired sixth all time and free throws made. Rebounds, he was first when he retired, and then assists, he was first as well, which I think is a really incredible thing. That assist number I always sort of look at and it's like, man, you know, and of course blocks and steals weren't counted, but you can, I think it's a safe assumption, I think you'll go with me, that we could probably say he probably would have been first all time in both of those.
Certainly in blocks. I guess it's possible that there may have been others who were stronger than steals, but he certainly would have been, you know, yeah, among the best ever in that respect as well. But yeah, I mean, he, you know, in addition to possibly likely being the greatest defensive player ever, he really was an effective offensive player. I mean, as you pointed out, he was, you know, he was an effective scorer, even though he was not a good shooter at all. But he, you know, he had the ability to get to the basket, to score on tip-ins, to dunk, to create the fast break through his passing and through, you know, to run an effective offense or be part of an effective offense. So he was a great offensive player, even though the one thing he lacked was shooting. You know, he really changed the style of the game in terms of, you know, really the combination of the mental and physical aspects of defense. Really, he was the first player to block shots in a meaningful way. Before Russell, it was considered largely considered a basketball wrong to jump on defense at all. And he,
I love that point.
Right. I mean,
you know, the king of the court like really talks about that, where they're like, "What are you doing, man? Why are you jumping?" And he's like, "I'm stopping them from scoring." And it's like, "No, you're losing your position. You're like, you got to stick in your position. Like, guys are gonna go around you, and they're gonna figure it out or whatever." So it's incredible to think about now. Like, we with you know, the hindsight, we sort of, you know, I remember reading that chapter or that portion of the book and being like, "How could you guys not realize how good that would be?" Or, yeah. But it makes sense though. It makes sense how they would say, "No, you're supposed to just stay in front of your guy and don't let him, you know, get to the basket." Whereas when you jump, you know, they could pass it. You know, you take yourself out of the play in ways. But of course, we now see the tremendous benefit of well-timed jumps for blocks.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah, you can. So if you jump at the wrong time, you can get beat on a block. But so you can see where that comes from. But obviously,
yes,
at the right time,
ask Hassan Whiteside.
Yes. There you go. And And he had the ability, you know, he had just so much quickness, and he was able to rotate and cover teammates' mistake. The Celtics famously had a hey Bill defense, where basically if the guard got beat, they would yell hey Bill, and Bill would come to dig it in the way and would either block the shot or alter the shot, or the modern idea of rim protection. I mean, that was really he really helped create that, because no one else, you know, every other big man that there had was, you know, relatively slow, relatively groundbound. The combination of the lack of athleticism and just the lack of, you know, anyone ever really playing that way. It took a while for other, other players to come that, you know, could even come close to kind of matching him that way. So, and the Celtics were, you know, amazingly ahead of the defensively from the rest of the league for almost the entire time of that dynasty. We'll get into that in another show, just how much better they were than the rest of the NBA when it came to defense. But they revolutionized the game on that way, and Russell enabled them to do that. And also his ability to pass keyed the Celtics' fast breaking offense, and helped change the literal pace of the game. I mean, the pace was already quickening because of the shot clock, but it just went into overdrive once the Celtics started to win championships. And throughout the early 60s, the pace became staggering of the game, and he was a big part of that, maybe the most important part of that. And, he also changed the geometry of the floor. He was allowed the game to be played more above the rim. There was more dunking, which happened some in the NBA, but was kind of a taboo to dunk, because it was thought mm-hmm. that you were showing up somebody. But, once Russell came into the league, he was dunking and nobody could stop him. So it just sort of became an accepted part of the game.
Who cares? Too damn bad. Yeah. Stop me then.
He wasn't necessarily the only guy, but, he was. Sure. And he also... was changing the style of the game. And he was also, incredible pioneer in terms of, he was really the first black superstar in the NBA, and part of an increased, black participation in the NBA. And in 1956, his rookie year, only 6 of 80 players were black. One of them was an all-star. And then in 1966, 47 out of 99 were black, and 14 out of 20 were all-stars. So, in a full decade, it completely shifted. And as the, into the 70s and 80s, obviously it became a black majority sport. So,
yeah.
He paved the way for, paved the way for the next generation of stars. Will Chamberlain, Elgin Baylor, helped really kind of, expand what was possible and show that, you can build your team around black players. And it, shattered some of the terrible stereotypes that were there, and that, there definitely were fans who were turned off by it. And there was a lot of fear written at the time about what would happen with, these black players being in the game. Are they going to rough white fans? But, the game grew in popularity, and, it demonstrated that, we put the best players out there. Most people are going to support it and be fine with it. So that's what they did.
And I do also, throughout reading these, a lot about Bill Russell and doing sort of the research here, a lot of it, a lot of credit I do give as well to Red Auerbach, of being very open to, hey, here's this guy, he's good, whatever, he wins any games, I don't care what color he is, And then I think the more profound thing that I think Red did for Russell was, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, of him being the first black coach in, the NBA and in professional sports, and did it without really just said, hey, this is your new coach, there you go. And I think that was something that was just really a cool thing for Red to do, is just not have it go where he's going to retire and then he says, oh, I think you should hire this guy. He said, this is our new guy, there you go, he's our coach, let's do it. And it wasn't a big deal. It was just sort of, this is our new coach, it's Bill Russell, he knows basketball, there we go. And it was so he didn't give people a chance to sort of say, oh no, he's going to ruin the game and all this sort of stuff. He said, well, not too bad. This is the coach. There we go. This is the Celtics. And I think that's an incredible thing. And I think that's what Red was so good about in his entire career, of sort of, a lot of it was Russell himself being that man and being that sort of person that was able to be that first black superstar. But I think it helped too that Red never stifled. It didn't seem like Red stifled him in any way and let him express himself both, on and off the court, and just said, be you, you're an asset that can help us win basketball games. I don't care what you say, what you do, all that sort of stuff. And I think that's testament to Red and really a forward thinking for Red as well, to just not seem to care all that much about any sort of thing other than, let's play ball. And you know, that's something I've always admired Red Auerbach for.
Yeah. And he obviously helped create an environment of, you know, players who were adults, who were willing to sacrifice individually for the team, who were willing to, you know, things like, you know, like, you guys were willing to sort of train their replacements. Like Frank Ramsey was willing to, you know, show John Havlicek the ropes. You know, guys who were kind of outgoing, you know, when Russell broke in, Arnie Risen helped, you know, sort of tutor him in the game. You know, he was toward the end of his career, Russell was going in. So they created that, environment where, you know, it wasn't, you know, the older players showed the younger players the ropes. There wasn't, you know, the kind of professional jealousy, the kind of racial strife, a lot of the problems that were, you know, that were in other places throughout the league. Not that everything was roses and sunshine. They, you know, they had their issues too, but they were able to, you know, have a really unique environment. It's a lot like the way that the, you know, kind of the Spurs are kind of run today. And I think Auerbach and Popovich, you know, are comparable personalities and comparable in how they empower players and how they, you know, the one thing that Auerbach really did for Russell was like, you know, or he told Russell, it's like, you know, I don't care how much you score. I'm not going to bring up stats, you know, in contract negotiations. Just go out there and, you know, do what you do best. And in that empowered Russell to, you know, play the way that he did. Because, I mean, Russell was criticized a whole bunch for not scoring at first. And people were like, you know, how is he going to last in this game if he can't score, if he can't shoot? And obviously he, you know, did everything else and was able to make scoring work well enough. So, but, you know, there were certainly a lot of doubts. And even when he became coach, there were a lot of doubts. They lost the championship the first year that he was coach. And he had his struggles in terms of managing personalities and managing the rotation. He admitted it afterward and it worked better the next few seasons. But we're going to get into a lot, I think, about what made Russell special, but also what made the Celtics special and how they were able to kind of create that synergy that led to, you know, 8 championships in a row and 11 out of 13. You know, we're also going to kind of get into the playoff battles, especially with the Hawks, the Warriors and 76ers and the Lakers, and specifically, Russell's rivalry with Wilt Chamberlain, how they kind of brought the best out of each other and how they contrasted with each other. I think we'll do some kind of comparing with, other dynasties, look at how the Celtics sort of compare to the Lakers and the Bulls and the modern Spurs and, you know, all those different dynasties, and just sort of look at some of the numbers and kind of how they compare. Also going to look at Russell's, you know, social activism, his fascinating post-NBA career, time with coaching the Sonics, and his time going into Hollywood, and you know, there's so much going on there. His importance,
the Kings, his head coaching of the Kings, we'll talk about a lot. I'm
sure we'll bring it up at least a little.
We're not going to do a whole show on that.
Maybe not a whole show.
Sacramento Kings tenure. All right, well, whatever.
I mean, if people call for it, you know, we'll do it. But
if they want us to, you know, we'll do it. Yeah, but yeah.
And his important teammates on the Celtics, you know, Casey Jones, Sam Jones, Bob Cousy, Tom Heinsohn, John Havlicek, Frank Ramsey, you know, a bunch of the guys who, you know, who were really important and kind of look at their roles and everything. And, you know, there's so much. I don't know, Rich, what are you most excited about exploring here?
I think, you know, there's a ton of stuff that you know, I think people have done, you know, plenty of work on Bill Russell. There's many, many books out there, many, many things. So we're just trying to sort of soak in as much as we can. But I think the biggest thing I'm going to try to, or at least I want to get out of this, is sort of take it from a different way than we've seen a lot of other, you know, websites, podcasts, anything like that, of sort of, I feel like there's so much when people talk about Bill Russell a lot, and when you read it and, you know, big major websites and that sort of stuff. And that's, I absolutely see why they do this, because they're not insane like us and just go nuts with research and whatnot. But there's always been this idea that, you know, Russell is this one guy, and he's this guy that beat Wilt Chamberlain a bunch. He's this guy that was a part of the Celtics, and he was a great defender and that sort of stuff. And I think one of the big things I want to do is little by little sort of shine some light on different aspects that maybe aren't talked about. Like I said, in this portion, I want to talk a little bit about how he was a good scorer and how he finished, you know, when he was done in the NBA, he was the third highest scorer, you know, in the entire league. Like that's profound. Like people don't, he's not just a stick figure defender that's just out there stopping guys and starting fast breaks or whatever. And that's not what I'm not saying a bunch of people say that, but I'm saying there's just this general concept that he's not that great of a scorer, that he wasn't, you know, that great of an individual superstar. And he absolutely was. I mean, he was just a tremendous offensive and defensive player. You know, in the discussion of Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, looking at how that's, you know, getting deeper into that rivalry and seeing if it's not just, you know, seeing it for more than just Bill Russell beat Wilt Chamberlain in a bunch of important games and okay, he's so much better than Wilt, you know, trying to get a little more nuance with that. And I think that's the thing in general of sort of shining light on Bill Russell and shining light on things that Bill Russell did, but also in a way doing it differently than most people. Like I think I'm very excited to look at the other dynasties as well that you mentioned, of looking at the Boston Celtics and looking at how they constructed their dynasty versus, you know, some other dynasties that we know, like stuff like that. So just kind of taking a different look at Bill Russell than I think I've ever read or I've ever listened to. And that's a challenge for, I think, both of us, but I think it's one that we definitely want to do. And that's something I'm definitely looking forward to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I'm interested in exploring, you know, Russell the person and Russell the artist. I mean, he really did care about the art form of basketball, almost as much as it did. He seemed to care about winning, even though he was, he must have cared a lot about winning to have the drive to win all those championships and to be the best, and that mattered to him. But you know, it mattered to him also, you know, just about as much about, you know, you know, the having a, you know, he talked about how, you know, there were times where, you know, the, in particular in the games against Chamberlain, but, or against the Lakers, you know, Baylor and West, the best players in the league, and how, you know, the gameplay would reach such a level that it would just like, you know, he would almost root for the other team to like make a basket after the Celtics did, just to kind of keep that run going and keep that excitement and keep that energy and keep all those things going. And I, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, kind of getting into some of that and to some of the, you know, and also to kind of get to try to dig into more about like, how the Celtics really, you know, push that style and how that style was changed and how that kind of influenced the league and just kind of get a sense of like the, how the league, just completely changed during the time of which his career. I mean, it went from this, you know, mom and pop, thing to a, you know, to a booming industry by the time he was gone. And, you know, he was instrumental in the, you know, in the success of that, along with Wilt, along with, you know, some of the other top players and teams. I mean, I guess everyone, you know, who played had at least a small role in it, but
yeah. I think that no, actually, now that you mentioned it, that's another thing as well that I think will be interesting to sort of tackle and talk about is how big of a deal he was to the NBA in general. I mean, people, you know, fairly or unfairly sort of ascribe that, you know, Bird and Magic came, and that's when the NBA finally was able to, you know, get out of the doldrums and all that sort of, you know, tape delayed NBA finals and that sort of stuff, where, you know, you look at the growth that Russell made, and like you said, it might not be as profound as the growth that Bird and Magic or Michael Jordan, you know, then after them, but what Russell and all these guys in this era were able to do was take this league that was just a literal nothing and make it into something. Whereas, you know, those guys, of course, they brought it to new heights that have never been seen before. But, you know, the credit also has to go for the guys that kind of got it off the ground as well in a lot of ways. And I think Russell, you know, Chamberlain and the other guys we're going to mention as well throughout this are all instrumental in that, you know, of that first initial growth of the NBA and the first initial real jump for that league to sort of get respectability in this country. So yeah, I think that's something I'm going to like to tackle as well a little bit of, you know, that these guys deserve credit as well for what they were able to do to build and develop the game.
Absolutely. So, so some of my, I collected a few of the best Bill Russell quotes that I think are, that sum him up well or are interesting. So we'll kind of close with that. First one is, "I am not a basketball player. I'm a man who plays basketball." And that sums him up well. That sums up his desire to be seen as a man, as a person, not just as an athlete, not certainly not as a symbol, even though he was an important symbol for a lot of people and for Black progress during his era, and for, you know, the hopes and aspirations. He wanted to be more than that. He was, you know, incredibly complicated, incredibly dynamic person who, you know, was so smart and thoughtful, and also very challenging personality. But he, I like that one for sure. The next one, I hope I epitomize the American dream, for I came against long odds from the ghetto to the very top of my profession. I was not immediately good at basketball. It did not come easy. It came as the result of a lot of hard work and self-sacrifice. The rewards, were they worth it? 1,000 times over. Which I think is a, yeah. You know, a good summary. And it's worth noting, and we'll get into this later on, that he, until he got into college, he was not particularly good at basketball player. Actually, was sort of at a like a tour that occurred between high school and college, that he sort of got, even though he wasn't really a particularly good high school player, he ended up sort of in this high school all-star team for California, and they played this in this tour, and he at that point kind of started to mentally realize that he could sort of start to see the game in his head and could start to see the moves and start to emulate them with his body. He sort of grew into his body, started to realize that he, you know, could jump and, you know, could really, you know, use that athleticism, and could become a great player. But he was not, you know, you would not think that one of the best, and I mean, there have been other exceptions, you know, like a Scottie Pippen, a guy who really wasn't particularly good, but I mean, he was really incredibly far away from being great. And then 2 years later is, you know, the greatest college player in right. in basketball history.
And just had no confidence either, which is another funny, right. you know, thing that you read a little bit as well. He's just sort of this like sulking kid that's just sort of like in the corner, and he's like, I'm not really any good. And like, he just talks about how he just has no confidence in his game and in anything that he does. He couldn't, he had trouble like talking to girls or whatever, and he talks about, and then just something just clicked, and he went, oh wait, I'm Bill Russell. And just it all sort of, you know, physically it of course helped that he sort of got a growth spurt and got a little bit, but it also was a big confidence thing as well, that he was like, oh, I can do this, or I'm pretty good at this game, I'm pretty good at being, you know. And then really that's where it all launches. So that's something that's really incredible as well. And like you said, there are a few stories like that, but rarely do those stories end up with the guy being, you know, one of the greatest players, if not the, you know, the greatest player of all time. So that that helps.
Yeah, and reading about him talk about like the mental game and how he just loved to you know, talk about the game in college with Casey Jones and study, you know, like you know, the different angles that rebounds would occur, or, you know, just different things about the game. Like he would, you know, talk to the best players and kind of just like soak everything in. And he just like was a, you know, almost a machine of just trying to like absorb all these new things and just all these fascinating new concepts. And this just, this, you know, year or so plus of like just discovering what he could do. And then, you know, once he came to University of San Francisco, it sort of being harnessed through through coaching and through his own hard work of play. It's just really interesting to see. The next quote is talking about the racial quotas in the NBA at the time. In America, the practice is to put two black athletes in the game at home, put three on the road, and put five in when you get behind, which is an amusing way of putting the state of affairs at the time. You can win without joy, but winning that's joyless is like eating in a four-star restaurant when you're not hungry. And it did seem important for him to, you know, to have fun and to, you know, to not let it be just like this dreary thing. And, you know, they won so many championships in a row that, you know, to keep that motivation and to keep the, you know, to keep the sense of awe and the sense of caring and the drive and all that is pretty remarkable.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. It's, you know, that, you know, that after five, he wasn't just like, you know what, I'm pretty good, I'm just going to chill out after, you know. And then to carry that over as well, into the coaching rank, you know, obviously being a, you know, a player coach and that sort of stuff. It's just, it's incredible what that is drive to win every single one of those years. And that entire team's drive to win every single year, that it just wasn't there was no complacency, it seemed like, ever. And then, you know, of course, it's gonna be a quote here you'll read in a little bit. It wasn't until, or the next one, at least, it wasn't until that he finally chilled out when he retired. And that was like, okay, all right, I'm done now.
Yes.
Like, it's just incredible to have it be turned off then. Like, all right, it's all about this. It's all about this. It's all about these goals. And I'm done. And then you just finish and it's over. And it's just like that. It's just, I envy that, because I am not of that personality whatsoever. So
the quote is, "Retiring was my final victory. Not staying a minute too long or a season too long. Let me leave on my own terms." And apparently after he retired, and this may have been until he was coaching or maybe for the rest of his life, but he never played in another proper 5-on-5 game which is
just nuts, because you still hear stories of like guys that have retired, you know, for 20 years and they're still at, you know, YMCAs or Sunday morning things, you know, just destroying these, like, you know, insurance salesmen, you know, they have no knees but they can still, you know. But yeah, that's just kind of funny, because, and he really, like, other than the little stints, and I know there was a ESPN Sports Century that talked a lot about it was quite a year, probably about a decade or so ago that came out, and they talk a little bit about Russell and his post, you know, basketball career. And it really was that. I mean, there were little stints, of course, we'll talk about, you know, the Sonics and the Kings and that sort of stuff. But it seemed like a guy who was just, when he decided he was done with basketball, it kind of was done with him. And that's, again, like that little fact that you talk about of not doing the 5-on-5s or whatever, it was just something that even he just seemed hesitant to go to games, hesitant to, like, and even today when they still show him, it's just like, yeah, okay, I'm at the basketball game or whatever. It's like, not a guy who lives and dies by basketball, even though he did, you know, during his career. But it's just an incredibly, you know, his personality and what he's able to do, and just how he's able to sort of separate life and basketball while he was there, you know, even while he was playing too, in some ways separating the two. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. The last one is, the only important statistic is the final score, which I guess is something you can say when you've won 11 championships.
Right. Yeah.
And you get out,
talk to Mr. Chamberlain about
you,
that.
Yeah. And you get outscored by Will Chamberlain in most of those games, I guess, you know, maybe a little self-serving, but yeah. You know, you certainly can't argue with the track record. I mean, it's pretty.
No, he earned it, unfortunately. Yes. For better or for worse, he earned the ability to say, hey, go look at the scoreboard, or, oh, whoops, sorry.
Yeah. There you go.
My hands, what are all over my hands? Oh, geez, what are all these? Oh, the rings. He's the only guy that can do the rings argument. And then,
and he's the only guy, I guess, who has too many fingers or too many rings for his
fingers. Exactly, you know? Right.
Because Sam Jones is 10, and no one else, I think, has more than 8. Yeah.
Shut your mouth, Phil Jackson, all right?
Yeah. Oh, okay, I guess Phil does. Yeah, I didn't think about coaching.
Well, what's he at now?
He's at 11. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's 11, plus he has 2 as a player. One of them, he was inactive. I don't know if he actually got the ring for 70, but he got it for 73 for sure. So,
okay. Well, in that case, never mind.
I guess,
you,
yeah.
You can keep talking.
Well, coaching rings, yeah, you know, they're not the same. So, all right, fine.
No, I think I'm excited to see where the series goes. We have a bunch of episodes planned, a bunch of special guests and all that sort of stuff, so I'm excited to see where it goes. But yeah, I think that's it for our sort of introduction and just kind of talking a little bit about him. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the series, and I think you guys are gonna enjoy it as well.
Absolutely. So yeah, please let us know what you as it goes along, let us know what you think about the WrestleMania series. You can tweet us or send a message to us on Facebook. It's at Over and Back NBA for both sites. You can find us at hardwoodparoxysm.com. Leave a comment on the show post if you would like. You could also what else can you do? You can also go to
Carrier Pigeon.
You can subscribe to our podcast by going to Stitcher and iTunes and leaving a rating and review. We would appreciate that. A particularly good rating and review would be nice. And Rich, I'm sorry, I cut you off. What were you gonna say?
Oh, I just said Carrier Pigeon as well.
Oh, Carrier Pigeon, yes. Well, that obviously, yes. We would appreciate any
Pony Express.
Carrier Pigeon, that would be beneficial, absolutely. So
yeah, Pony Express mail would be good too.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
whichever. Yeah, yeah, that'd be fun. I'd love a horse to come to my house and drop off some mail. So it's, I don't get that. I get a mail truck. I don't know about you in Ohio. I don't know what you guys do in Ohio, but we have mail trucks here in Illinois.
I believe so. We're gonna have drones probably soon enough. So
that's true. Yes.
Yes. So.
That's good. But no, of course, yeah. Let us know one way or another. We, even if it's, you know, hey, I hate this series, guys. It's good. Feedback is feedback, and we like to hear it anyway. But don't be a jerk. I mean, how do you hate this?
Don't be a jerk. Obviously.
Yeah. Don't be a jerk. Yeah. Yes. But I mean, if you generally do not like what we're doing and hate it, then let us know, because it'll be good.
Or, I mean, you know, just be nice about it. That's all. Okay.
Constructive.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. We'll be back again soon.